This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2023 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us for Socialism 2024, which will be held in Chicago next Labor Day weekend, August 30th through September 2nd. It's never too early to make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
Okay, so, like I said, I'm Justin Charles. This is me anyway. We planned this this talk specifically because we think it's a pretty important set of issues. I'll speak for myself and say that I've seen many times in my time on the left organizing projects, campaigns with a great deal of potential kind of wrecked, halted, stopped because we can't get over differences amongst ourselves, whether that be race, gender, socioeconomic, education, what have you. There's just a lot of difference within our class that can sometimes make it difficult for us to work together. But I think if we want to win, there's no way to winning without getting through that. So I think the movement needs to develop strategies for dealing with the difference that we encounter, for managing that conflict. You're not going to resolve everything. Not everybody's going to be friends and love each other all the time, but we have to figure out ways to work together for our larger goals. So we wanted to put together, or I wanted to put together this this talk with that in mind.
Yeah, I agree with all of that as the framing for this panel. I also wanted to add from my own experience on the left, I think that our society is in many ways segregated and also atomized. We are, living in the wreckage of 4 decades of neoliberalism. Many of us kind of didn't come from or grow up in mass organizations that, caused us to interact regularly with people who were very different from us, who might come from different socioeconomic backgrounds or have different ideological perspectives, or come from different racial or ethnic backgrounds. And one product of that I've seen in my organizing is a kind of lack of endurance, like a lack of what I would call social endurance amongst people, a lot of people on the left. And what I mean by social endurance is the capacity to keep showing up and working together with other people, even when it's uncomfortable, right? Even when you don't like the other people necessarily, right? But because you recognize that you need each other, right? That you keep showing up and you are able to sort of sit with different kinds of discomfort and conflict and find ways of working through it again and again. Because that's what it is, conflict is inevitable in organizing. And so we thought it would be great to have a conversation about, the problem of cultivating solidarity on the left across the many different divisions within the working class. And we wanted to, in order to avoid making it too abstract and to make it as useful as possible, we wanted to think through some cases, like some examples from the experience of longtime organizers. And so we're really lucky to have with us three veteran organizers from the labor movement and the housing movement for housing justice. And we are going to stage a conversation with them for the first part of the panel and then open it up to everyone to share your experiences, to ask questions of the panel and also of each other.
All right. So I'll just briefly introduce our panelists. So we have at the end, Michael Hollingsworth, co-founder of the Crown Heights Tenants Union.
I'm not a co-founder.
I'm sorry, but you're
just a standard rank and file member.
Rank and file member, but a deeply involved rank and file member of the Crown Heights Tenant Union in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, New York. Moving, we have Justine Medina and Connor Spence, who are both members of the Amazon Labor Union that helped organize an Amazon warehouse in Staten Island, New York. Cool. So the first question, can you each tell us a little bit about your organization, how you got involved, some of your organization's past achievements, and what you're working on now? Why don't we start with Connor?
Hi, my name is Connor. I'm Amazon worker, organizer, Amazon worker since 2017. I started at a warehouse in New Jersey. I was working at Amazon to pay my bills for school and then ended up kind of radicalized by the working conditions. Ended up becoming a co-founder of the Amazon Labor Union, organizer. Amazon Labor Union famously were the first and to this day the only Amazon union to win an election, an NLRB election at an Amazon warehouse in the United States. To this day, we're still fighting for recognition from the company, fighting to secure a strong contract. So all of our work still organizing around that goal primarily, but generally still trying to day-to-day improve the conditions for workers organizing through collective action.
Justine?
Thank you. Hello, comrades. My name's Justine Medina. I've been working at Amazon for coming up on my second anniversary this month, 2 years. I've been involved in the movement since Occupy in many other capacities. Yes, exactly. But I got involved in the union movement on the ground outside of just solidarity because I was recruited to SALT at Amazon. I'm a member of the Communist Party in New York, and at the time I was co-chairing the New York Young Communist League, and we were reached out to see if anyone was interested in like actually getting in on the action and helping build the union, and I couldn't. My duty required that I do nothing else. So now I'm in this struggle, and it's been a crazy world, and I'm so proud to, work with the people that I work with, Real Salt of the Earth, and, work together to bring democracy to our workplace and win a contract and move along the struggle. So thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks. Just a heads up, I actually wrote down what I wanted to say because I was on a panel on Friday, and I didn't do that, and I hated it after because I forgot stuff. So just bear with me, but these are all my own thoughts. And okay, so the Crown Heights Tenant Union, also known as CHTU, was founded in 2013. The idea was and still is to bring together long-term black residents like myself and newer ones who tend not to be black. We realize that our enemy isn't each other, but instead it's real estate capital. Real estate capital, as defined by me, includes landlords, developers, their bootlicking politicians, and ever increasingly our judicial system, which continues to put property rights ahead of our own. We're an all-volunteer organization. We don't take any grants or discretionary funding from politicians, and we're the first autonomous tenant union in the country. I got involved in CHTU in 2016 when my 84-unit rent-stabilized building started to undergo a process to convert empty units into million-dollar condos, which obviously is terrible. My neighbors and I didn't know how to fight back, so I basically went on Google and looked for groups or orgs that could help, and the Crown Heights Tenant Union was one of the first ones that I found. A common thing that happens in tenant organizing is that once your particular issue is resolved, we tend to sort of step back from organizing, right? But for me, I think for the rest of my life, I'm always going to be grateful that when I needed help, when my neighbors needed help, the Crown Heights Tenant Union was there. So I stay involved with organizing as a way of like paying it forward. Like I want to be what they were to me for someone else. So that's why I continue organizing. Our achievements include winning repairs, getting rent reductions, stopping completely, and or forcing significant changes to luxury developments, winning the strongest statewide tenant protections in a generation in 2019. During the pandemic, we won multiple eviction moratoriums, an emergency rental assistance fund, and we won a rent freeze on 1 million rent-stabilized units in New York City. But I think our greatest achievement is reminding our neighbors that we as tenants, we have rights and we should never be afraid to use them. And also seeing the maturation process of people who reach out to us for the first time and they're really scared and they're meek and they don't want to fight their landlords, and seeing them transform into fully fledged, like unapologetic, fierce tenant advocates. And in terms of like what we're working on right now, as always, we're continuing to fight to keep long-term tenants of color in the neighborhoods they help create. We're fighting a right-wing mayor to limit the increases on rent-stabilized tenants, many of whom haven't bounced back since the pandemic. We continue to fight luxury developments, and we also are fighting the ever-increasing threat of YIMBY, who masquerade as leftists in our spaces and push market-based solutions to our real estate capital manufactured housing crisis. It's a never-ending battle, but as the kids say, we are with the shit.
All right, thank you. So the next question is about the forms of difference that you encounter in your organizing. So the working class is divided among many different lines, right? So there are socioeconomic divisions, like within the broad working class that can be salient in organizing. There are ideological divisions. We have to contend with racism. We have to contend with transphobia, with homophobia, with sexism, right? There are many different forms of difference that can be obstacles to organizing the working class. And so we wanted to ask you to reflect on the most relevant forms of difference that you've encountered in your organizing, in the communities that you each organize, and how you've seen them show up in your work.
Who should start?
I guess we can start with Connor again. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Justine, whichever. Yeah.
So, in Amazon Warehouse, it's pretty diverse. Amazon, they build their warehouses where the labor is cheapest, so you end up with a workforce that is probably 80% people of color, 20% white. And then also there's, depending on the area, there's different kind of political aspects. Staten Island, obviously, even though New York City is Union Town, Staten Island is pretty conservative, pretty reliably shows up for Trump. But a key part of the company's anti-union strategy, a couple of weeks after we started getting cards signed, they brought in the union busters, and their main goal is to focus on what keeps workers divided and kind of zero in on that. So a key element of that obviously is third-partying, trying to paint the union as a service, as a group of outsiders, people who are coming to take your money, as opposed to workers engaged in an internal struggle to improve the conditions inside the warehouse. And then they do what we do as organizers. They map out the warehouse. They look at the different types of people that are there, if you are a white Staten Island conservative, they did this. They went up to them and they said, well, the organizers, those guys are just a bunch of thugs. They're just, you know, trying to get rich off of you guys and your hard work. Because, I mean, at, you know, in the beginning, and still is, any organizing committee that organizes at Amazon is going to be majority people of color. Then if they are talking to workers of color, the narrative changes a little bit. It's mainly focused on how Amazon, because it's so successful, is prey for people like us who, you know, we want to kind of leech off their success. And by extension, the workers of color who, according to the union busters, like, you guys are doing it the right way. You're working hard, whereas they're just outside. They're trying to leech off of you and take your money. And that's just counter to what we do as union organizers, where our job is to obviously find the commonalities that people have and unite them through fights. In the course, I mean, Justine can talk about this more, in the course of building our committee, you know, the differences do manifest, particularly political differences around people who are pro-union or have different perspectives on what unions are. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about your relationship with Uncle Pat?
Uncle Pat! Okay, so those of you that follow ALU lore might know of Uncle Pat, because he's great. There are obviously a lot of sort of the workers' committee does have a lot of leftists on it. There's, there's communists, there's socialists, there's anarchists been involved, and but there's also strong members who like voted for Trump and they're fairly conservative. And one of our favorite sort of sometime curmudgeonly, like classically Italian American people is Uncle Pat. And he got involved in the election drive as one of the first middle-aged people, because we were primarily young too, so that was a sort of main, there was a hurdle to overcome and like get older people involved, sort of above the millennial thing. But he was also someone who was really respected as a worker in the warehouse. At Amazon, people don't care about political difference on the work floor. Like, they recognize that it exists, but they just care about like who's working hard, who's helping them be taken care of. Like, there's a lot of just natural understanding of each other as workers, I think, even in an unconscious way. And so Pat was someone that was really looked up to, and he was able to, without Pat, we would not have won that election. You know, he was able to convince hundreds of people that we weren't able to get for various reasons. And Pat and I get along so well, and I'm like, little Stalinist, and he's like a Trump voter. So it's like, but we know that openly. And we, we joke about it with each other, and it's just about the workers, right? So I think as socialists, it's like important to be open to that kind of experience,
All right, so areas where we find differences are in tactics, culture / race, and class. As tenant organizers, we have a pretty diverse set of tactics in our toolbox. They include but aren't limited to things like canvassing, door knocking, marching, rallies, sit-ins, where our members can take a rest, the media, rent strikes, and good old-fashioned protest, including protests at offices and private homes of both landlords, developers, and elected officials. My personal saying is that if you're going to come into our neighborhood and fuck it up, we can and will do the same in yours. I should have asked for permission. I can swear, right? Okay, cool.
Swearing is encouraged.
cool. So in the gamut of those tactics that I mentioned, there are often different levels of agreement and comfortability in our organizing. So depending on a particular fight, there are two great things though about our union is that one, we do everything democratically, And number two, you don't have to do anything that you're uncomfortable with. To the question, what does that look like in real life? For example, if we're participating in an arrestable action and you are uncomfortable with being arrested, you can do something like jail support, which is huge. People, I think, underestimate the feeling you get when you're released from jail and you come out and you see like 20 or 30 of your comrades, you know, who were there for hours waiting for you. So that's huge. It can also present itself, you know, in a situation where we're protesting at a goon's home, as I mentioned. Some people think that that's sort of crossing a line. So, yeah, I agree it's not. But if you're one of those people that, you know, you're uncomfortable with going to someone's private home, you can phone bank for the action. So that means you can call other members and say, hey, this is happening on such and such date. Can you come out? So that's another way that you can participate. Yeah, I think I may get to touch on like culture and race maybe later on.
So, could you each tell us about an obstacle that you've encountered in your organizing related to these differences, to some of these differences you've described? How might you have How did you respond? What lessons did you learn through that organizing across difference? We'll start. Why don't we start with Michael, and then we'll work back this way.
So, as I mentioned, for culture and race, I can think about the time during the George Floyd uprising, which I'm sure we all remember. We found great solidarity across racial lines, and I think that a lot of white people realize for the first time that you don't call the police on black people for like trivial things, right? I remember getting a phone call from a tenant in a building that I was organizing. I'll call her L for this in this space. L is black and she's lived in her building for about 30 years. And she reached out to me because her new neighbor, who's lived there less than a year, who's white, called the police on her because she thought her music was too loud, twice, right? And again, remember, this is at the height of the George Floyd protests, right? So how do we respond to that? I personally believe in confronting anti-black racism and calling it out in public, but I also believe in education and redemption. So when we had the next meeting in Elle's building, we talked about why it was wrong to call the police in that particular situation. We educated our new neighbors using examples of black New Yorkers, like Eleanor Bumpers and Shahid Vassil, who had the police called on them and then were summarily executed. Thankfully, Elle's neighbors, I think, got the message and they've never called the police on her again. And they actually now participate in the building-wide meetings, which is good. And the lesson learned is, I think, that organizing is hard, obviously. Not everyone starts at the same place of understanding. It's our job as organizers to educate and teach our skills to the folks who are willing to learn. And then if you're not willing to learn, it's our job to be ready, I guess, when they are willing to learn. So that's sort of a lesson learned.
Thanks for sharing that. That was really, I'm going to give a more generalized answer to Michael's really good specific story. There's always obstacle from difference that's just sort of definitionally there. That sort of opposition and then catalyst for change and overcoming that. As a labor organizer, it is incredibly rare that you go up to someone and you're like, hey, do you want to join the union? And they're like, oh yeah, I just had forgotten about it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, if they're like already gung-ho, they're gonna be seeking it out. So if you're like going to talk to your coworker about a thing, or especially if you've never met before, which, you know, and when we were card signing and collecting thousands of cards, you know, we'd go to people on the break and talk about things. And, you know, there's always some sort of difference of like, readiness and reticence, and then often that's because of, you know, there can be a difference of perceived political opinion, like getting in the way, or various biases, or sometimes, you know, racism can play a part, right? You know, that did come up occasionally with you know, Chris. You know, people would say racist things, right? And then there, you know, there can be all sorts of difference, and then you just, as an organizer, then still have to get that person later, so you're going to come back and talk to them until they join the union, right? So, the overcoming the obstacle, some obstacles are still to be overcome, but it's like you just keep showing up, right? Like you just keep showing up until people are ready to also show up, right? And you try to have like grace and remember when you too were mistaken, and just really like it's your job as the organizer to be the bigger person and to attempt to be the bigger person and to not get into arguments with people and to find the unity in, you know, through difference, right? That contradiction. And you know for like example, you know, those of you who have been following ALU stuff also know there's currently like a democratic, you know, reform effort in the union. So disagreements on direction of the union, you know, sort of strategy or like, you know, how it should be run, et cetera, right? But that doesn't mean you don't show up, right? Like I still go to union functions, rallies, et cetera. I'm trying to get involved in the Women's Caucus that is forming, right? Like, so even though there's like sometimes heated disagreement, you just like have to keep showing up, and that's how you build the unity. So, yeah. It's... No? Okay, great.
Well said.
Thank you.
All right, so the last question maybe builds off of what you just mentioned about the internal conflict in ALU, but you could take it in any direction. We just wanted to hear you all reflect on what solidarity means to you. So solidarity is a word that we invoke a lot on the left, and we understand that it's necessary to forge solidarity between people who are differently situated in any given society or community in order to win. But it's not always clear what it means. And sometimes when we think of solidarity, we think of unity, right? That it requires unity between all of the people involved. And so we wanted to ask, in your view, does solidarity require unity? And what is the role, if you think there is an important role of conflict in forging solidarity?
Yeah, so I think often in the labor movement, not just in ALU, but in a lot of unions, there's often calls for unity, and not always made in good faith. I think there's this perspective that unity means everybody being on the same page, agreeing with one another, or if you can't agree, you have no place doing the work that needs to be done, when the reality really is that unity is more about the fact that we can do the work despite our differences, and we have mechanisms in place to manage the fact that we have differences, and that's generally why unions are democratic, and we solve our differences like through democratic procedures. And so this idea that, like, you know, where does conflict fit into all this? It's just, it's natural, and it's part of, like, you could never do the kind of organizing that needs to be done to take on a company like Amazon without putting workers in the driver's seat, engaging the rank and file, allowing rank and file workers to have a say in the decision-making process. Part of even trying to get a contract is surveying contract demands. Nobody decides that for the workers. And throughout all that process, conflict just comes up. It's inevitable. But the very strong unions, the unions that we modeled ALU after when we formed it independently, they believed very strongly that there needs to be an institutionalization of dissent. That's the only way it can function properly. And you'll never be able to organize workers on that scale without involving them in the decision-making process and giving them a voice in their own union. They didn't, you know, we didn't form ALU just to trade one set of managers for another. That's not how this works.
Do we just go straight down?
Yeah, you can.
Okay,
just go down.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think solidarity isn't about unity of agreement. It's about unity of action. And, you know, showing up for each other despite when you disagree. Because, yeah, I mean, solidarity is about showing up across difference. That's just, like, very important. And also, I don't know if folks went to the opening, how many people in here were at the opening plenary with, okay, great, yeah. So, you know, Dr. Angela Davis and a bunch of other really amazing women who wrote a book together, Abolition Feminism Now, were talking about a point where when they were writing it, you know, they thought when they were originally coming together that it would be so easy because they felt like they had so much in common politically and with their experiences and from their perspectives that all they had to do was write it down. But then even in that, right, they realized when getting down to the nitty-gritty that there were actually so many differences, and those differences sort of almost led to the collapse of the project. But they just kept showing up, and actually, in struggling to to sort of keep working together, despite and because of, right? Those two, both despite and because of, right? That contradiction, that dialectic, they were able to overcome it. And Dr. Angela remarked, you know, difference can be the motor for producing unity. And I think it generally is, actually. So I think it's just about, you know, solidarity is about showing up even when it's hard. So.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a long thing about solidarity.
Yeah, read it.
So the question is, does solidarity require unity? I believe it does. I don't think you can stand alongside your neighbors, your comrades, your coworkers, in any fight without sort of a baseline of solidarity. Again, that you may not be united 100%. I guess the best way to sort of describe it is I'd look at it like this: at point A is the problem, and point B is the solution, right? And sort of that road from A to B, there's going to be a lot of conflict in your spaces, but I think so you might not agree, like, on the road, but you all agree that you want to get to B, to point B. And so I think that's sort of like how I look at it. And in terms of what, if any, is the role of conflict in solidarity, I think something I've noticed over the years is that conflict in our spaces provide better solutions to a problem. And what I mean by that is, one thing I've noticed is, like, many organizers, we usually think that, like, our first idea is the best, and they often aren't. So we sort of, like, you know, have blinders on and just want to go down that one path. We also tend to use tactics that have been successful in the past and try to apply them to new problems where they may not, so we sort of get pigeonholed that way as well. But I think when we have conflict amongst ourselves and we debate things, we end up with a better coherent strategy and way to move forward. So that's in my opinion, that's a way in which conflict actually helps us on that road from A to B, I guess.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.